The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Doctor, look.
Stand aside, nurse. I'm Dr. Homebrew.
Stand clear. Oh.
Hey, welcome everyone. It's that time of the month where Dr. Homebrew is back on the air talking about homebrew and, probably some other stuff. You know, I don't know. We'll see yeah. where the road takes us tonight.
It's my time of the month, I'll tell you right now.
Whoa. Yeah. Whoa, Brian.
That's a lot of information we just received.
Well, it is. It's
guys have cycles too, right? I mean, geez.
Well, this is our Dr. Homebrew cycle. This is exactly what it is. We are here. It's our time of the month to be sitting here talking homebrew and everybody. We have Brian Cooper and Brian Schar. What's going on, fellas?
Hey, we're here. We're talking to you.
Yeah,
that's right.
I'm prepared to drink some beer with you guys.
Yeah, yes. For sure. We have a Kolsch up today, I think, right?
Yeah, it's a triple IPA with
glitter
and haziness. Yeah. Extra haziness for you.
That reminds me, my friend gave me a cider the other day. He's like, yeah, I got a can of cider for you, which I probably should get out of my car. He's like, yeah, it's, blah, blah, blah. It's like cranberry and, fennel. And I was like, that sounds good. And glitter. And I'm like, people are still doing glitter in things to drink? He's like, yeah, why wouldn't they? I'm like, that's a good question. I don't know why they wouldn't, but I can tell you why they wouldn't, but they shouldn't. So I'm really not that excited to dig that one out.
We did the Northern California Homebrewers Festival, and it was like the, Vegas theme or whatever. And I dressed up as Elvis and I married some people too. That was fun. But I went around with, people would, pull me around on their wagons because I was just sitting on this chair and I had a little vial of glitter that I would insist on putting in people there, baby, you need some glitter here. Yeah. And I was just like, oh, man. Yeah, there's some pink glitter for your beer, baby. There you go. I couldn't do a really good Elvis, but I didn't fill out the Elvis, but there was another guy that had the same Elvis costume and we were like palling around together and marrying people. And yeah, it was fun.
Yeah.
But yeah, I put glitter in people's beer on purpose.
Was it the edible glitter? Or was it just like glitter? Okay.
All right. Food grade.
Sure that,
yeah. Just
that makes sense. That
express right. purpose. Yep.
Well, hey, before we get into this beer, I want to thank our sponsor, Five Star. You can go to fivestarchemicals.com right now and figure out the best way to clean and sanitize your home brewing equipment with Five Star Chemicals. It's pretty funny how that works out. Let me pull this tape off here. But yeah, check them out. If your homebrew shop doesn't have them, don't go anywhere else. Ask the homebrew shop to order some for you. I'm sure they would love to get the state-of-the-art, the brand new, well, I wouldn't say it's brand new, but the leader, I'm going to say, in cleaning and sanitizing for your home brewery. It's Five Star. It just is. It always will be. It always should be because they taught us how to do it right. They got us off the iodine, boys. You know what I mean?
Oh, man. Off of the iodine and the bleach were two of the best things I ever did for making my beer better.
I missed the bleach cycle, but like the iodine, I was like, oh, my God, bro. And then I really, literally remember Five Star coming out and we're like, hell yeah, dude. I love it. This is the best.
It doesn't stain your equipment.
I remember before Star Sand had the squeeze bottle where you can squeeze and like the auto measurer, it was just in a bottle and that cap would twist on and sometimes it would break in shipping. Like I remember it. Yeah.
Did you know the Five Star Chemical Company was founded in 1994?
Good gravy.
Wow. I did not know that.
I did not know that. So anyway, thanks to Five Star. Yeah. Appreciate it.
That'll be 30 years and a few more, huh?
Wow, that's crazy. Nate, welcome, dude. Welcome back, I should say.
Hey, thanks, fellas, for having me. Appreciate it.
Yeah, no sweat, man. No sweat. So you sent a Kolsch.
Yes, sir. This is actually a third time, so it's a re-rebrew, I guess.
Re-rebrew. Okay, that's good. No. We're gonna judge the beer, and we're going to do all that. We're going to take our break, and then we're going to come back, and we're going to talk to you about rebrewing and maybe get some tips from rebrewing and stuff like that, because we do have a fair amount of people, even though they don't send in the beers, do rebrew these. And I think since that's a large portion of our show is like, hey, you should retry this and do whatever. Maybe we can pick your brain a little bit about the best way to sort of tackle all that.
Or we could turn it into a complaint session about like what drives you crazy about the doctor's homebrew, what they told you to do to your beer and what you really should have done to your beer.
Well, I can handle that. We don't need Nate for that.
All right.
Yeah. Okay. So I can now see this is the problem. I can forego all of my dumbass questions and have Brian Cooper just start.
Okay. I've got the beer and I've got the beer poured. Yeah. Well, I poured it to look at the clarity. I'm going to pour it here to refresh the head, which is actually kind of nice and fluffy and everlasting. The aroma, it's got a pleasant, clean, lightly malty aroma with it's got like a faint kind of apple pear like ester in there. It's just a moderately low amount, but it's fruitier. It's definitely fruitier than the Heineken we had been drinking on the last show.
That's true.
Yeah, medium low spicy herbal hop. Just lightly sweet seeming. I don't know if you can smell. It seems like your brain, human brain, can probably smell things that seem sweet or have the impression of being sweet.
Sure.
Because sugar is your brain's favorite substance.
Mine is anime.
Yeah. A very faint sulfur. That's okay for the style. Semi-light overall, but definitely not boring. No diacetyl or acetaldehyde. It's cleanly brewed. I really like the aroma. I give it 10 out of 12 points for aroma. Appearance wise, I gave it 4 points for appearance. Pale gold color with a soft looking white head and mostly very fine bubbles. Persists quite nicely, clinging to the side of the glass. It really, as I drank the one last night, it went down the glass and I had to finish the bottle. But yeah, it went down the edges of the glass and just coated it all the way down. So I meant to listen to the last show or the two shows now where we've had this same beer and remember what we told you to do or what was the head a problem? Because if you were trying to fix the head on this one, it really worked. You know, the clarity is nice. It's almost kind of lens like, you know, through the glass. As I finished the bottle last night, I poured the last bit in, there was a little bit of haze that crept in from the bottom of the bottle. There was a little sediment in there, but it actually tasted just fine with that as well. So yeah, 4 points for clearance. It was just a tiny bit of, it's not perfectly clear. There might be just be a tiny, but you can still call it brilliant. Color wise, it is a pretty pale gold and almost, it's not grayish, but it's just almost like, it's not as yellowy or orangey as you might expect a beer to be, but this is a light beer. It's fine. Flavor-wise, a low, soft maltiness, bready, and white bread crust-like. A medium bitterness rises up to meet this with a low, earthy, herbal character. Something just a little bit biting. I thought maybe it chucked up to the hops and a little bit of bitterness. Clean, low-temp ale ferment is apparent, balanced to the malt. It finishes quite dry and also a bit minerally. With that minerality kind of staying in the aftertaste. So it has this kind of combination of bitterness and dry finish with a little mineral quality, but I would say it's weird because it's like, I want the crispness of a Kölsch, and it's kind of a mouthfeel thing too, but it's maybe not classically crisp like you expect, but it seems like it should be with all that, you know, just the descriptors that are there. It should be, it's dry enough and it's refreshing enough. There's maybe the minerals getting in the way a little bit, but you know, all that's there seems right. It's a delicate beer, so that kind of bitterness is standing out a little bit there. Mouthfeel wise, I gave it a 14 out of 20 for flavor. Mouthfeel wise, medium light bodied with no warmth or creaminess, medium carbonation. And I don't know if it's a bitterness or just the faintest bit of astringency poking through. It doesn't seem really astringent. Just making it just a little bit rougher, not harsh at all, but just a little bit of more intense bite. You could kind of pull it down a point on mouthfeel, but you know, for the most part, it's pretty refreshing and just a little bit of an edge to it. Overall, this is a pleasant drinking Kolsch. Just there's a little something in the way of it, of the smoothness of it for some reason. I don't know. It's a clean maltiness in such a delicate beer. I'm having trouble reading my own notes.
I was like, you all right, man?
Yeah. It's that NA is hitting me now. I'm getting extra sober.
That 0.0.
Yeah, the really delicate maltiness in such a light beer like this can easily become hidden behind minor distractions, like a little bit of mineral or something light, a little husk-like or something in the mouthfeel. But any oxidation would do the same thing, but I don't think there's any oxidation here. If anything, you can maybe just boost up the maltiness a little bit here, just a touch, real fine points, and back off on the minerals in the water just a bit to improve the balance a little bit. So it's a really finely crafted beer with a wonderful aroma, a ton of nice things that went right, especially the cleanliness of the fermentation. Landing on a 38 here. I think it's an excellent beer. I don't remember where I landed the last time, but you're hitting some good marks here. I would just like it maybe a little crisper and something's kind of getting in the way of that delicate light sweetness of the malt. And I don't know what it is for sure, but let me see what Brian says about this beer.
I like this beer quite a bit. And I hope that as JP was saying, I hope we're not going to start giving you contradictory advice and like taking you in circles or something. I thought aroma wise, there's a low malt aroma, crisp and kind of like just milled grain a little bit to me. It was very inviting. I liked that a lot. Clean, no off aromas. I got a very low berry / fruit aroma, which is really good. You know, people talk about like a light fruitiness in a Kolsch. And this is the kind of light fruitiness I think that really should be in a Kolsch. Light doesn't mean, you know, it's like 3 on a scale of 1 to 10. It's like light should be like a 1. And I think that you succeeded in getting the fruity esters right.
The aroma is really nice. Yeah.
Yeah. Really like the aroma. It's no hop aroma, and that's appropriate for style. I gave it 9 out of 12 for aroma. Appearance, 3 out of 3. It's crystal clear, very impressive. It was a low, persistent white head, pale gold in color. Flavor. Initially, the flavor is soft malt. Not quite as perfumey as Pils malt. So I'll be curious what kind of grains you had in your grain bill. So we'll hear about that later on.
What did we tell him to put it in it last time to cheat his way into a better Kolsch? Yeah.
So there's some medium low bitterness that comes up to balance mid palate. You know, it's a firm bitterness, and firm bitterness doesn't mean it's an IPA. You know, firm bitterness just means that there's some bitterness there and it stands up to the malt and it's perceptible and it's good. Well attenuated, finish is balanced and of moderate length. I get a very low spicy hop flavor if I talk myself into it. I don't really get a lot of hop flavor in general. 15 out of 20. Mouthfeel, 5 out of 5. Mouthfeel is soft, rounded and creamy, no astringency. Carbonation is medium, medium low body, no warming. You shouldn't have warming in a Kolsch. I guess you could have an Imperial Kolsch, but I'm sure someone's made one of those at some point. I'm not sure that's something I would really want to drink a lot of. Overall impression, 8 out of 10 for a total of 40. You know, I love the bitterness. I love the fruitiness. The only thing holding this back from being like a 45 to me is kind of the very, very low hop flavor. Right. So I kind of have to talk myself into it, and maybe I'm just a little bit stuffed up or something. Maybe I'm just not quite getting the hop. You know, the guidelines require at least low hop flavor. And to me, that's like the only thing that is not like right down the middle and right. Just perfect about making this a perfect Kolsch. And the bitterness is great. The malt is great. The fermentation's great. There's nothing, there's no off aromas, no off flavors. But I think that, I mean, you're up to 40 for me. And I think that maybe just a little bit more hop flavor probably could, you know, have this go up to like a 44, 45 point beer. So well done. Thank you for sharing.
Excellent.
Awesome.
All right, Nate, what do you think, man? What did you do?
So I'm super happy with, you know, a 38 and a 40. I mean, the last episode, that's what I said. My goal is to get this to a 40 point beer, just knowing how tough a Kolsch can be, and, you know, and just the balance and how subtle that can be. It really is a tough beer. So I'm super happy with, you know, a 38 and a 40, just to be around that window. So yeah, I'm stoked. And, you know, the last one I sent in wound up getting a 28, right? So, I went down and the first one I sent back, you know, early in 2021, that was a 36 out of 50. So okay. Actually went down on my second batch. I kind of cheated some things there, kind of shorted some techniques here. And this one, I really wanted to, you know, do the best I could with a lot of things. So maybe what I'll do is I'll just kind of start with a recipe and we'll kind of go over the recipe. And then sure. If you want, there's some time here at the end, we can kind of talk about, you know, what I did differently across the batches here and what I think helped to get me this score up here a little bit. So
yeah,
right on. Yeah,
it'd be great.
Yeah. So for this one, it's also just 10 pounds of malt for, you know, 5.5 gallon batch into the fermenter. So I went with, I kind of splurged a little bit and used a little better Pilsner malt. So I don't know if it's appropriate to use names here, but I went with like a, so the Pelton Pilsner Mecha grade malt. So I want to get some of that maltiness, that more flavor. In the past, I've kind of used, you know, some of the bigger brands where maybe it doesn't have the much flavor. Now, I was hoping that Pelton Pilsner from Mecha grade would bring a little more flavor to it. So it's 80% that Pilsner malt. I did 1 pound of Vienna Breeze malt. And then I did 1 pound of flaked maize, just trying to get that dryness, really trying to, again, get that crisp feeling in the beer. With that flaked maize.
It is dry.
Mashed everything at 149. Again, really trying to drive that crisp flavor. And I know Brian picked out, you know, almost a more round mouthfeel. And again, everything I was doing was trying to drive that crispness, you know, almost get to that like a lager type finish with it. So I did use treated water. So that's one of the other things I've changed. I used to treat, you know, my tap water with a chloramine tablet just to get rid of the monochloramines and chlorine that are in the water system. But one thing I really want to do is, and I probably should have started with RO water in general, but I used a mix of RO water and spring water. So that might've added some of this minerality that Brian Cooper picked up on. So my intent was to really try to get to a, you know, this 2.5 sulfate to chloride ratio, where it's supposed to really drive that dry and bitter, kind of dry bitterness. And that's where I was going from a mineral addition. So I was like, you know, in the mid 60s for my calcium, you know, a couple points of magnesium, no sodium, and about 45 chloride. And then just that 110 sulfate. So not huge on the minerals, but still trying to drive to that ratio that they expect to be, you know, a dry crisp finish. So I was actually a little nervous that maybe I didn't have enough minerals in there, but, you know, by the sounds of it, maybe it's a little more minerally, because again, I did use that blend of RO water and some spring water. So I'm assuming that spring water already has some natural minerality into it. So I'm not quite sure where that lands.
You can find general numbers for it. They might not be right, but yeah, you can guesstimate where it might be. And yeah, your sulfates might have been a little higher than you thought they were, but that is a good approach for sure. Just blending RO with a spring water to get close to just like kind of a light neutral water for a beer like this, and then going a little bit up with certain minerals, but you don't want to go too crazy either. So yeah, nice job with the water. I would say maybe back off that sulfate just a little bit.
Okay.
For me, but yeah.
Sure. Just make a quick note here for myself.
Yeah.
So yeah, it was a, you know, 60 minute mash here. I did a 60 minute. I get in the last batch, I kind of shorted that a little bit. So made sure I did that. I did a, kind of did a sparge for about 20 minutes. And then I went into a 90 minute boil again, just with a high load of Pilsner malt. The last episode, when I was on, you guys did pick up some, you know, some cream corn type notes to it. And again, I kind of did this short kind of modified version, trying to get a batch done in a little short order here. So I went, tried to do everything from a best practice standpoint, from, you know, high Pilsner malt
Yeah. The sulfur was really restrained. There's not much here for sulfur, and it's acceptable to have a little bit. It's in the acceptable range here. So that was good.
Awesome. Yes. So I did, you know, full 90 minute boiling, had a pretty good rolling boil there. As far as the hops go, so I did add an ounce of German tradition at that 90 minutes. So those were about a 5.7 alpha acid. I did 15 minutes with Milfru, and those came in at about 4.8. And then I did an ounce at 4 minutes. So right before I, you know, knocked the propane off there. So I had some tetanang, some German tetanang at 3.3. So trying to get a little bit of that aroma and a little bit of flavor in there. So I had about 3 total ounces and trying to stick to those, you know, German hops there, trying to keep it with on style there as best I could there. And, you know, I'm picking up on Brian's comments there, maybe get a little more hop flavor. Maybe I could add, you know, a quarter ounce to each of those last two additions. I think the bitterness was good. But maybe I could add another, you know, quarter ounce of that middle fruit at 15 minutes and maybe another quarter ounce of tetanang to kind of maybe boost that hop flavor a little bit and help that out a little bit.
Yeah. I think sometimes those noble hops, the German and Czech hops, can be a little tricky in that they sometimes, I mean, I've had saws from the homebrew store that are like 2% alpha acid. And I know it's not the alphas that are the entirety of the flavor or aroma or character of any hop, right? There's essential oils and a whole bunch of other things, but I think sometimes, you know, we're so used to, as American homebrewers, throwing around, you know, Simcoe and Citra, you know, 10% alpha hops and things, that we start dealing with some of the German or Czech or other continental hops that are maybe 3%, you know, 4% alpha. And we're maybe reluctant to put in a lot because our brains are thinking, I just tossed in 3 ounces. That this is going to be an IPA, but it's just there, you know, or like West Coast hops are here for content of alpha acids and oils, and a lot of the noble hops are like down here, and that's okay. That's they are what they are, but I think that can be maybe lead sometimes to not hopping enough with those noble hops in places where you need to hop.
I agree with some of the hop comments too. At the same time, you want to be careful because you're dealing, as you add more and more hops, you're dealing with a lot of plant matter, and you might start to get kind of a vegetal plant like green grassiness in the beer that you don't want in there if you go too crazy. I think it's a subtle adjustment that might be needed. I'm not getting a lot of, you said there's some Zoss in here, I guess, but I'm not getting a lot of spiciness. I'm getting more of kind of the earthy herbal character. You want to maybe bring up the floral and the spice a little bit, maybe a little more Zoss, a little more Hallertau, get the floral up a little bit. That'd be fun for sure, but not too heavy. Yeah, like I said, maybe a quarter ounce of each. You don't have to brew it for American tastes and go nuts with it.
Sure you do.
No, that makes a lot of sense with the hops there. You know, and so when I, you know, kick the flame out here, try to do some things to, you know, get into a best practice here. So I chilled it down, you know, below 70 here, you know, with my immersion chiller. And then I wound up oxygenating it. So I have a O2 canister and I've got a, you know, rod that goes in the fermentation vessel. So again, I hit it with oxygen for 30 seconds to 45 seconds. Again, just trying to do everything I can to get this thing out to a good start. Right. I didn't do, a yeast starter. That's one thing maybe I could have done better, but I mean, the attenuation was really good. I didn't notice any off flavors there. So I wound up using an imperial yeast, the Dieter, and I got down to a 1.006 after about 9 days. So fermented most of that at about 60 degrees. The last 3 days, I brought it up to about 64, 65. And they also added a spunding valve there too. So I'm just to kind of capture some of that CO2 as it's going off. And one other thing I did with this too is, so I keg everything. What I did is wound up filling my corny keg full of Star San or a, you know, sanitary solution there. And as I was priming, I used the fermentation vessel to basically push that 5 gallons of Star San out of the keg that I was going to use to keg this. So just, you know, A, not waste CO2, but you know, any aromas or flavors, you kind of captured in that vessel. So the same vessel that I was using to capture the beer, basically I used, you know, the the fermentation CO2 to purge all that sanitary solution out before I put it in there. So again, it's trying to do everything I can as a closed system for this beer too, just knowing how subtle and how delicate it is. And then the fermentation vessel too, I use it to be able to transfer out of it without any oxygen. So using CO2 to, you know, push from the fermentation vessel into my keg and just kind of vent the keg as I'm doing that. Just again, it minimize any oxygen exposure here with a style like this to, you know, keep those cardboardy flavors away type of thing. So
yeah, even you want to purge any beer lines that it's going through, make sure those are all purged with CO2, just everything that the beer is going to touch, and you kept the oxygen out, it seems, you know, to a pretty high degree. That's good.
Yeah. So yeah, after fermentation there, so I went blagering at 38 degrees Fahrenheit for about 14 days. And then I went up transferring to that keg that I said that I could purge with a kind of a natural CO2. And it sat in the keg for 14 days before I went up packaging and sending to you guys. You know, and hopefully that sat cool too while, you know, before judging here. So I think it wound up being, you know, just about a month of lagering time before it got out to you guys. And yeah, it kind of sat cool for that whole time. So yeah, that's pretty much the recipe. I think I kind of hit up everything from the yeast to the hops and the grain bill there and talked a little bit about the mineral additions there. So
I got a thing to talk about. And I get, like, immediately when I tasted this, I got like a hand soap flavor. Like it was like, you know, like floral, like hand soap, you know, not like super floral, but like, I don't know, just like a hand, fucking hand soap. I don't know, whatever. Antibacterial hand soap.
Like a floral. The floral hop.
Yeah, maybe it's not there all the time. It like comes and goes. But yeah, like a light hand soap thing. How long was it on primary?
Your glass there, JP?
No, we wash in the dishwasher because we are middle class.
Well, mm-hmm. I wash my hands really well before I package all this, so I don't get any contamination to you guys here. But it was about 14 days in the keg, I'm sorry, 14 days in the primary and 14 days in the keg before packaging. So,
and he only put two pumps of hand soap in the keg this time. Yeah. Like last time he used three and we said, no, you got to back that off, buddy.
You guys don't get that. Like a,
I don't like really.
A flowery alkaline thingy.
Floral hop.
No. And Nate, what malt did you say you used?
I don't know.
What were your malts? What malt?
So yeah, 80% was the Pelton Pilsner Mecca grade malt. Okay. I did 1 pound of Vienna malt, just the Breeze variety, and then 1 pound of flaked maize. And the hops again were, so it was an ounce of German Tradition at 90 minutes, an ounce of Hallertau Mittelfrüh at 14 minutes, and an ounce of the German Tettnang at 4 minutes.
Maybe it's a hop combination.
But maybe that Mittelfrüh is kind of coming through a little bit.
Maybe it's the Pilsner malt, right? It's Mecca grade. It's not like a standard continental Pilsner or something. Correct. And I'm not getting a hand sanitizer or hand soap smell, but maybe Pilsner can be very perfumey, and maybe it's throwing off something perfumey that you're more sensitive to.
Maybe, but like, I know the Pilsner perfumey thing, and that's not what I'm getting. Yeah. It is very much like, I'm trying to think of like the actual brand of just hand soap. I can't think of it.
To me, I get a flowery kind of like Mittelfrüh kind of throws that off for me. I don't get like the soapiness, but like the kind of like that flavor, that aroma. To me, Mittelfrüh gives that to me a little bit. But
I mean, it is. If I do it like on the side of the glass, like if I hold the glass like at a 90 degree to my fucking nose, I can do a perfumey thing. But it just, it's like, I don't know, man. It's a little more, maybe almost even synthetic floral. It's just this weird combo that maybe it is the malt with the hop, sort of
like a geraniol with the malt thing kind of blending.
Yeah. Maybe that's what it is.
Did your daughter put Play-Doh into that glass like before the show?
No, we actually don't let her use glassware. She will cut us.
We'll blame the Flonase as well.
All right. Well, look, man. If you guys don't get it, then I'm not gonna.
Yeah.
Well, it doesn't mean you didn't get it, JP. I mean, you're sensitive to something that we're not, and I'm not getting it, and that's okay.
No, you three are wrong.
Well, and you do have to be mindful when you're judging of like, did you use a hand soap before you judge the beer? And you're like,
right,
your hands can carry that stuff pretty well.
Yeah, for sure. I actually haven't ever washed my hands ever.
Okay.
So I know that's not what it is.
Hmm.
Anyway, actually, you know what? It's a good time to take a break. So hang on a second. Okay. We're going to take a break. We'll be right back here on Dr. Humber.
Hello, fellow BNers. This is Sully from the 21st Amendment Brewery located in San Francisco, just two blocks from Giants Park. Before Nico and I opened the 21A and before I was a professional brewer, I homebrewed on my small four-burner apartment stove in a back house in Santa Monica, California, making my extract brews before graduating to the daunting idea of all-grain brewing. Homebrew books and information was hard to come by back then. The internet hadn't been invented yet, along with other things we take for granted today, like electricity and potable water. One thing I wish I had back then when I was learning was a radio show that could teach me the ins and outs of brewing and answer questions that I had about homebrewing, a resource for making great craft beer. The 21st Amendment Brewery is excited to be a proud sponsor of Dr. Homebrew, a great show that teaches you what you need to know about making incredible beer. Good stuff. Listen up. You might learn something. I certainly did. And thanks for your support. Tasty Crack Games.
Now, back to the examination.
All right, thanks for hanging around, everybody. We're still here with Nate, who brewed this Kolsch again for the third time. And I think we're pretty much done talking about it, right? I mean, we covered everything. I'm right. You guys are wrong. That whole kind of thing.
Yeah.
That's what I figured. So let's talk rebrew. So, Nate, you were saying earlier that you rebrewed this. This is the third iteration.
Yeah. Yep. So the first time I did this was kind of my getting back into homebrewing. So after some youngsters that, you know, blessed their lives here about 3 years ago, I took a little bit of a break. And back in, I think it was 2020, April of 2020, I made a Kolsch here, just kind of got a kit off the shelf at my local homebrew club. And, you know, send it in for evaluation. I mean, some of the things that I like to do, I mean, I love to share my beer, but I also like the feedback portion of it. And really, I don't know, I always like to try to improve things and try to make things better. And that's why I love, you know, being on the show and sending beers out to you guys. It kind of, you know, fits all three of those things. So, you know, after that first episode, I learned some things that I thought I could do better. And, you know, I've been listening to a lot of podcasts, listening to a few folks out there. And, well, you know, some of the thoughts out there is, you know, maybe I could, you know, hammer out a Kolsch in a shorter amount of time and get things turned around. And kind of skirted some things there and did almost like an abbreviated brew day there. And you guys definitely picked up on some things. So, you know, that first beer I did wound up being a 36 out of 50. So, you know, one of the things is I didn't have maybe as much Pilsner malt in there as I should have. I had more pale ale malt in there, so it was a little darker, and you know, missed the note on some hoppiness there. Carbonation wasn't where it needed to be, and you know, so I did this rebrew, and again, I probably, you know, shortcut some things that I probably shouldn't have. So, you know, earlier this year, I sent that in, and you guys picked up on it. I mean, you nailed it. So I did a, you know, a shorter mash and a shorter boil. So you guys picked up on, you know, some cooked corn or some cream corn or some DMS flavors. And really we went from a 36, you know, score, which was a little dark and maybe needed some bitterness reduction, went to a 28, which took too much bitterness off and really kind of cheated those things. And this third time, I really wanted to, you know, do things right or do things by the book from a Kolsch, or really treat, you know, a high Pilsner malt grist here, classic, you know, with respect and where it should be, you know. So that was my goal. I think even on the last episode, I said, you guys can help me get this to a 40-point beer. And it only took one more shot here. So I took your advice here. And again, one of the things I want to do is, I want to bring some good quality malt to this too, right? And no offense to any maltsters out there, but again, I just trying to put my best foot forward, bought one of a good quality malt that I was out there, did a little research and brought that Mecca grade Pelton Pilsner malt, a little bit of Vienna, and then that flake maize, really to try to dry things up and try to get that drive that crispness. That's as a home brewer and just, you know, being in a home brew club and that's one of the toughest things I think we can do is really to try to drive to those lager qualities, like even a Kolsch being a hybrid, you know, trying to drive that crispness and that dryness is sometimes pretty tough. So
it's a super challenge. I mean, I think the malt is high quality. I mean, I've heard nothing but good things about Mecca. I've never used them before or whatever. But yeah, I just drank it again. I got that same soapy thing. So I don't know, man. I don't know what the deal is.
No, maize, you can use maize or rice or other things to lighten up. Some coastals use a wheat malt, and that's another thing you could experiment with in the future if you want. I would say too that I was going to make a joke, but that our goal wasn't to have you make better beer. Our goal was to have you spend like twice as much for this batch than you needed than you did on the first time or something. Yeah, I'm sure this was not an inexpensive batch to produce, but like you splurged on good ingredients and you had some fun kind of trying to get to basics on it, and that's good. You know, you can get a good classic German Pilsner malt and you know, or pale malt from Germany, and go traditional, but there are some really good U.S. craft maltsters that are making products that the border on the character and the quality of those malts, and they're made here. So, you know, that's cool. We had a fun, you know, at one of the homebrew cons, there was a good malt tasting and they just like, you know, Mecca was there and all these other craft maltsters, and we just got to taste the malts and talk with the, you know, the people that made them. And that was really fun because there's some really good stuff going on these days. So yeah, a lot more choices than we used to have.
And one of the big suggestions too, so the last two beers I wound up using was a dry yeast, and I was getting almost like a Belgian characteristic or almost like some spicy notes, and you both picked up on them both beers, and I noticed that too. And you know, I know you guys made some suggestions using, you know, a liquid yeast, and I want to try the imperial yeast, the Dieter, and that seemed to really do a great job. I mean, it kicked off super fast and really did a solid job fermenting there, and I didn't pick up nearly the off flavors I did with some of those dry yeast that I've used the last couple of batches. So and then just trying to treat things right. So I've got a dedicated, you know, I got an old freezer that I'm using as a fermentation chamber, basically to, you know, keep that temperature down in the 60s for the most part. And I think, again, just using a good quality liquid yeast, I think there's a lot of options out there for everybody, right? But, you know, good quality, you know, liquid yeast, and, you know, using a yeast starter is probably a good option if there's any questions with, you know, the age or how, you know, how it was treated or if it sat out warm for any period of time. But this stuff was pretty fresh and I got it pretty close and was able to pitch it pretty close. So I wasn't too worried, and for the attenuation I got there, it seemed like it was pretty good. So I didn't have too many concerns, and I thought it was a good opportunity to send this one out to you guys to try to get a, you know, an improved beer here. So
yeah,
that's one of the things I like to do is experiment. So, you know, trying a few things with the new malt and the new yeast and get your feedback on it. So that's part of the process and the hobby that I really enjoy.
And that is part of, you know, rebrewing a beer is it's not, you know, not everybody, anyone who wants to can send their beer to us and we'll give you feedback. But, you know, one of the best tips, of course, that you can do is to, you know, if you're in a homebrew club and you have beer judges in your club, share the beer with people. Like, you know, we had the guy on the last show that brought his beer to his club and they all started tasting green pepper. And he thought it was maybe a little bit, they were joking with him or something and spread the word around, but he just couldn't quite get that flavor and aroma component. There's some things where you have blind spots in your senses that other people will pick up on and help you to hone in on what's going on with your beer, how to make it better. And if you listen to them and don't just get big headed, like my beer is the best, you know, like forget you guys, you know, really listen to people and take it to heart. And it seems like you've done that. So, I mean, I would say if just generally, if we could talk about some tips for rebrewing a beer, I mean, I think the number one, and what a lot of our brewers definitely already do is to, and you Nate also obviously do, is to take good notes. You know what you did and you know, you know, what maybe went okay with that batch and what didn't, and did that fermentation take off? Just take really good notes about every aspect and the you know, not just the gravities, but just every aspect of your brew day, what you did, and you know, you don't have to get too anal about it, but just, you know, make sure you capture what you did. If your mash temp was a little higher, a little lower, or whatever it is, fermentation temps, you know, whatever. I'd say number two for me too, just be to be patient. It takes time to have a batch come out and to, you know, say, oh, okay, I'm just going to rebrew this and next week I'll brew another one before that one's finished. And I'll do a third one, like before you even taste the first one, you might be going way down the wrong path and never get on the right path. So just be patient, brew the beer, drink it when it's ready. Let it, you know, if it's green at first, let it age a little bit and let it condition, let it, you know, acclimate, whatever you want to call it, and just taste it as it ages a little bit and see, okay, this is where this beer is. And it's not really improving with time, but just like, you know, taste it and see where it's at and figure out where you want to go. That's like decide maybe what most needs improvement in the beer. That would be kind of number three, I guess, for me is like, okay, you know, is it a malt thing that you want to change? What did you like or not like about the beer?
The malt, you know, brings up a good point, Nate. So you changed the malt up. You said you wanted to go with like a high quality malt and all that kind of, but how come you went with like a domestic instead of a European malt? And there's no right or wrong answer. I'm just curious. Cause in my mind, those things don't really necessarily equate for a style like this, for a, you know, more of a European style. It's harder, I think, to find a domestic malt that comes through. And this one does do a good job, but I think it's, I don't know. It's a bold choice. It was a brave choice, I think, to do that. So what led you down that path?
Yeah. And again, you know, from an experimental standpoint, the easiest thing for folks to do is probably change one variable at a time. Right. So I changed my yeast, I changed my water, and I changed my, you know, the biggest portion of my grain. But again, what I want to do is really try to, you know, get to a good point here with this beer. I didn't want to really, you know, screw around a whole lot, especially if I wanted to send it to you guys. I want to put my best foot forward. So, you know, the last time I wound up using was the Avangard German Pils malt. So it was a German based, you know, malt there. And my guess, looking back, probably the two biggest things I probably did was starting with a good water, at least a water that I understood. So like an RO water, and then getting a good quality liquid yeast. I think those are probably the two biggest things I probably did. And then treating those, you know, where they need to be, excuse me, from a fermentation temperature. The last one I try to keep, you know, pretty cool as well. But again, what I want to do is I want to get to a best practice kind of standpoint here. And maybe I could have kept with the German pills here and been just fine. But again, with this rebrew, I wanted to really, you know, put my best foot forward and get some good quality ingredients and try to get some maltiness too there. Cause sometimes though, like some of those other brands, there's not a whole lot of flavor that gets lended there, you know? And that's what I want to try to do is bring some of that malty character with it. I know well, it's
that's by design, I think too, for those malts. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, that makes sense. I mean, you know, especially if you're thinking about rebrewing and beefing up the recipe a little bit, that's a big consideration is your base malt. And you know, we have the luxury now I guess even now, like with the, you know, Admiral and Mecca and these sort of like newer malt houses, we can sort of shop around a little bit more and get a little more fine tuning to our base malt profile, especially in a beer like this, where it matters a lot.
Right. And if you decide it's your malt that needs changing, you know, what did you not like about the malt before? What malts do you hear good things about out there? You know, if you're changing your base malt like you did. But also sometimes it's not like, increasing or switching out a malt. It's, you know, maybe taking away a specialty malt or something that's kind of getting in the way of your style that maybe didn't need to be there. Or some people take a kitchen sink approach and try to make it maltier by adding six different kinds of specialty malts when you may just need one or two. And, you know, sometimes simplifying the recipe is the best thing, but other times, hey, if it works and you've done it with the six malts and that gives you the flavor profile that you want, go for it. You know, I would say too, one thing that you've changed a lot of things every time, you know, and sometimes some of the classic advice is to, you know, some people say just change one thing at a time. Well, that if you don't have a lot of patience, that's going to take a lot of time and take you forever to get where you're going. So, but I would say change a limited number of things at a time and resist the urge to change too many more. I would say, you know, change a couple things at a time. If you like, okay, you got some feedback from people, this small, it could be changed. Maybe this is poking out a little too much and, you know, you might experiment with your yeast, but I mean, that's two big things right away. Like maybe just do one of those things and something else simple, like a light adjustment to the water maybe, or that was poking out, whatever it might be, but just whatever your judge friends tell you is like, okay, what would you change if you changed one thing? And, you know,
well, so what are you going to do next?
So, you know, I'm pretty happy with this beer. If I do a rebrew, maybe I'll wait, I'll save it till spring, and maybe I'll do a little more hops there and try to get that score up to maybe a 45, and then maybe make this like a competition beer. So again, I would just, from a Cole standpoint, I'm super happy to get to a level around 40, and I appreciate you guys, you know, working with me and having me on here a couple times to, you know, I want to taking a step back, but I think I take two steps forward since then, and again, got this to a pretty decent beer. And again, on a Kolsch and to get a score of around a 40 from you guys, I'm super happy. And this has been a really fun process too, right? Cause I've made a couple of changes and realized what I did wrong and kind of did things better. And, you know, maybe next time what I'll do is I'll go back to all German pills and see what it comes out at and add a little more of those German hops and try to get some of that presence in the hops out there and see if I can't get it to a 40 plus beer. So yeah, no, this is super fun. Like I say, this is part of the hobby that I enjoy is, you know, trying to make things better and always improving things and sharing my beer and just talking over with you folks. So this is pretty cool stuff for me. So
it's cool. It's been fun for
us.
You
did a great
too,
job.
Sure. Yeah.
Nice
job. This, you know, something you said about wait until the spring and brewing it again. And I tasted a sip of it. And I was like, you know what this tastes like? If there is such a thing as a winter Kolsch. It's a little bit malty. It's a little bit, there's a little bit of oomph there. And then I imagine your spring Kolsch is going to be lighter. I don't know why. I just,
I'll keep the hand soap out of the spring version.
Please do that because that the hand soap has sort of died down a little bit.
We use Irish
as
spring.
It warms. I get a little like green apple skin, but I think that's appropriate to style in a little bit than what it is. Yeah. I don't know. I get that floral hand soap, fresh hand soap. It's not stale. So there's that.
I'm gonna let Brian chime in too on tips for rebrewing, but another thing I would say too is just to be consistent in your practices. Like try to make sure you're hitting your gravities. If you're rebrewing a beer with a new malt and you're 10 points over on your starting gravity, it's gonna be a different beer. So just be ready to, you know, if you don't hit your gravity, at least adjust down with the, you know, water and get it closer to where it was or whatever, and just avoid changing too many variables at a time, you know. And as you're deciding, you know, what to change with the base malt and things like that, just go into the homebrew shops and taste all the different malts and smell all the different hops that you have at your disposal. We got a huge choices these, you know, these days, and there's a ton of variables you can add to the beers. Some of the malts that may also taste good or interesting in the homebrew shop, they come out different in the beer. So have some beers that have been brewed with them if you can, and you'll find commercial examples that tout certain ingredients and say, okay, I kind of like the way that ingredient's playing in here. And just get experience with, you know, almost like judging experience. Become a beer judge. That's another thing you can do. But, you know, at least ask a judge or enter a competition with your beer and see what they say. And just really listen to it.
This really, we'll let Brian Cooper take a breath here for a second. Brian Shaw.
Yes.
Brian Shaw.
What do you got?
Yeah, I don't know that I have a lot to add over what Cooper just said. I think
perfect. Thank you.
No, I think that what you're saying, Cooper, about having, you know, set processes that you have the basics down so that you're taking notes, you're doing, you know, the same stuff the same way each time. And you're showing us the notebook there on video, Nate. And then I also, like you were saying, the conventional wisdom is don't change more than one thing at a time. I think when it comes to recipe stuff, that's probably good advice. But if it's something like, oh, I've got bad sanitation in this one area, there's no reason why you can't fix your sanitation and also make some other change. And I think the key is to understand, you know, don't make too many changes at once. But if you're making multiple changes, understand why you're doing each one and what the interaction might be. Like something like fixing your sanitation is only going to be positive. And let's say then you add more hops, or you change your malt ratio or something. That's kind of independent from your sanitation. And you can make that change and not worry about, oh, well, what's that going to do to my flavor, or characteristics of my finished beer. But yeah, I think other than that, I don't think I've got a lot to add other than what you said, Brian.
All right.
Well, it's kind of just common wisdom, but you know, and number six would be just have fun doing it. You know, and it seems like you have, Nate. So, and we've enjoyed again having you. And thanks for sharing your beer so many times.
That should be number one, not number six. Yeah, you should be having. Yeah. That's the point. It's a hobby, and it should be fun. You know, we're not doing this for a living or to make money or something. Yeah. If we're spending all this time and effort, it should be something that we enjoy and that is fun for us.
Touche. Very good.
One last quick comment, if I can make quick, just like you guys talked about the notes, that's one thing that's super helpful. And then there's tons of brewing software out there too. I'm not going to plug any one out there, but I've used different ones. And if you really want to drive consistency in what you're changing, I mean, there's some great tools and calculators out there, and it's almost spot on now with your color and your IBUs and how you get to things. I mean, there's some really great tools out there, and I just encourage folks to dabble around there and use those and start, you know, making it, you know, if you get a notebook, that's great too, but you know, utilize some of these online softwares that can really narrow things down. And especially from a judging standpoint, where you're trying to get into a window or a set style, a lot of these have, you know, style guidelines built right in, and you can tweak your IBUs or your SRM based on your colors and your attenuation. And you can really, you know, tune your own process, right? I mean, all homebrewers kind of do things a little differently. And once you know your system, I mean, you can really change the software to, you know, manage where your losses are and really get really consistent results. I mean, that's just one thing I've learned probably the last 12 months is some of the software out there has been huge, and, you know, taking good notes and figuring out where your losses are and getting really repeatable results. If you want to, you know, continue to have beers that are spot on each time, I think, you know, having those notes and relying on something to, you know, kind of give you a little bit of a hand and with that software, I think is just something I encourage folks to take a look at and look out there. So
software can be a great tool for
absolutely.
Like, and you know, it's still going to be no substitute for being sloppy on sanitation or something else. A lot of what, you know, the good brewers out there, they'll use consistent recipes, and they also like control every variable that they can to make sure that their beer that they've produced and has become a hit, whatever, in their brewery, it's their flagship, always tastes the same day in and day out, as close as it can be. You know, there's always going to be a little variation in some of the craft breweries, but the macros especially take that stuff super seriously.
You got to. All right, we're going to take a quick break. Nate, thanks a lot, man. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you for sending beer. We look forward to iteration number four in the spring.
Thanks, fellas. Have a good evening. Appreciate your time.
You too.
All right, it's Dr. Homebrew, everyone. Hang on. We'll be right back.
The leader in affordable, high-quality kegerators is here. Introducing Komos, the kegerator designed with serious beer drinkers in mind. It features an all-stainless steel draft tower, a major upgrade over traditional chrome-plated brass towers, and Komos keeps your new tower cold with their air-cooled tower fan, wrapping your beer lines in frigid coolness. Your beer is poured from innovative forward-sealing faucets that don't leak, so they stay cleaner for longer. Dual gas inlets on the rear of the fridge allow you to run both CO2 and nitrogen gas. Serve your beer with CO2, serve your kegged wine or even cocktails with nitrogen. The digital temperature display has the largest range available, allowing you to use the Komos kegerator for fermentation if you need to. And now Komos kegerators ship with duo-tight draft fittings for that click-to-connect assembly we've all dreamed of. Buy direct from KomosDraft.com and receive free shipping on your order. That's KomosDraft.com.
I'm sorry to tell you this, but we're going to have to pour you out.
Back to Dr. Homebrew.
All right, everybody. Real quick seggy here to wrap up the show. It is celebration season. And, you know, I've said it several times just in my life, especially in the last couple weeks. I could not find celebration for the life of me. I couldn't do it. And people online are like, oh, I love celebration this year. It's so good. It's so great. Mm-hmm. I couldn't find it. Well, finally, I got it. Celebration in a can. And I will say, like, I sort of like the bottle because it is, I don't know, man. It's like an old, at this point, it's an old school method. You know, the bottle's there and whatever. But the can design, for some reason, is very, very cool. It's like this ox blood red. You know, it's a classic celebration. It's, I don't know what it is. It's the maybe the font that they use that's super big on the can. It looks cool. The can looks old school, the way the bottle feels, if that makes any kind of sense to you.
Yeah, the can looks like that you'd expect the can to look from the bottle, even though it's different. Right, and they did a real nice job of that. Yeah,
I will say,
for sure,
I don't like the fact that the acronym IPA is the largest word on this can. It's larger than Celebration. It's larger than Sierra Nevada. It's larger than the logo, for God's sake. It's huge. And that's all people are going to see.
We need to scream that it's an IPA.
Which, and I get, you know, but whatever. Anyway, I wanted to really finish off this show drinking a Celebration because it just, why not? You know, we're not going to commercial calibrate it or do whatever, but like just as a general cursory thing, I think it tastes really, really good this year. I'm used to Celebration, like fresh Celebration, being a little more assertive. And this isn't. It feels like a little more smoother. And I don't know if you guys got that at all anyway.
I would agree with that. I would agree with that. And they say, Sierra Nevada says, and I believe them, that the recipe is the same every year. But because beer is made from agricultural ingredients and agricultural ingredients vary every year, the hops are going to have different alpha acids, are going to have different essential oils, are going to be a little different. The grain can be a little different. There have been years when I haven't liked Celebration. They're few and far between.
Yeah. But
there have been years where it's like, I don't know that I like this. And then there's years where it's more aggressive. There's years like this is just a very subtle, nice, easy drinking, just great beer.
Yes, this year Sully feels more drinkable early because you know it used to be a thing where you go, okay, you get a 12 pack of Celebration, you have a couple, you're like, oh man, this is like super fresh beer, and then you sort of, at least this is what I would do, just let it hang out for a month and let it sort of chill. But you don't need to do that with this one. This is, you just drink it right now. Absolutely.
I think you're growing right like a horn out of your forehead, JP, because I don't understand what you're saying to me at all. No, I understand what you're saying. I've never done that to Celebration. Now, Anchor in years past. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Because that was so spiced that you had to lay that down for like years sometimes to make it be drinkable.
I guess I just always looked at the balance for me, like Celebration. Well, because it's a red IPA essentially, right? I mean, if you're looking at the camera, if you're watching it, it's, you know, maybe a little darker orange, but I always consider it like a red style IPA. And those malts for me with hops balance out better longer. Like Santa's Private Reserve from Rogue is sort of the same way. Although it's impossible to get fresh Rogue down here, which greatly upsets me. But that beer tastes a little bit better, a little bit older. I don't know. It's just, I think it's like those caramel malts in the IPA that mix with the hops tend to just jive better for me on my palate, you know, because I've had Celebration like 6 months out of the keg, 6 months down the road. And it's very good. It's different. It's a different animal. But it's still very, very good. Like there's a couple bars around that will just keep a keg for 6 months and then throw it on, you know, in like, I don't know, May. And it's a cool treat. You go, oh, wow, it's really neat, man. It still tastes like Celebration, but it's not the same. But it's sort of, you know, a higher alcohol amber ale. I don't know, man.
I'm not selling it, but I would say there's a point where it becomes diminishing returns after which it's not a beer. It's a fresh hop beer. It's a fresh hop IPA. IPAs in general, you don't necessarily want to age.
Well, and this is already, wouldn't they brew it? August, I think.
Probably August,
September. So it's already a couple months old, but I don't know. I was just sort of thrown by that when I drank it. I was like, oh, this feels, it feels like a semi-aged beer. And I don't know what that is. Maybe it's my palate changing, but it just feels smoother, smoother on the palate.
Could there be anything with the packaging that's creating a different impression?
I mean, maybe I don't know, the reduced oxygen, you know, because we all know cans have a better O2, you know, deal than.
Right. There's going to be always some ingress through the cap, you know, crown caps included. Yeah. I know that Sierra Nevada a long time ago changed from having screw top caps to the crown caps on their bottles. Then they stayed with bottles for a long time, but craft has gone toward cans. And I would say for good reason. Keeps, you know, helps with the dissolved oxygen a lot, you know.
Yeah, keeps it, it's keeps great.
Lower. Can protects the beer better than a bottle. No light's going to get in. Yeah, so I think it's a good packaging decision.
Oh,
I don't think they're just chasing a trend. It's just like, okay, it was time to put the stuff in a can, and it looks good.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's good.
Yeah, I love this beer. It's like so, candy, orange peel a little bit almost too.
I've done versions where I've aged intentionally, and or I've just had some that I kept around for too long. Mm-hmm. And I have bottles from years ago where I did a multi-year tasting of Sierra Nevada Celebration, and it was just a bad idea. It wasn't good. Like we usually do Bigfoot barley wine tastings.
Invite me, and then yeah, I can't believe that it wasn't bad. Yeah, I can't believe it
wasn't great.
Well, Bigfoot's a good one to do that with, and even the Anchor Christmas beer. But even like the Anchor Christmas beer starts getting bad after you get to like X number of years back.
Well, we did a Bigfoot at, I think it was either, it was somewhere. It either was at the brewery or someone's house, somewhere, right?
The Torpedo Room, maybe?
No, I didn't go. I've been there one time.
Okay.
But anyway, it was like, you know, the six-year-old Bigfoot was the best tasting Bigfoot.
Yeah.
After that, like Cooper saying, diminishing return, just sort of getting the soy saucy thing and whatever. And again, it's no slag off on the beer at all, because all beer just does that. Mm-hmm. But it's like it just 6 years was like that perfect balance to me of like malt and the hops still, because you still want the sort of, it's an American barley wine, for God's sake. You still want a little bit of oomph there.
Five years is when it starts to get really good. I agree with that. Like 5 to 7 years, you're in really good territory.
That's where
after 8 to 9, 10 to start, you're gonna see some diminishing.
Yeah. And if you go if you go up to the brewery in Chico, they'll sell you, or they used to anyway, a variety pack age, like six different years. Yeah, it's pretty
they still do that. Yeah. Yeah. Right. The last I saw it, yeah.
That's all right. Well, that was it. I just wanted to talk. I just want to wax poetic about Sully for a second. That's all. And Sully.
It's a great beer.
Man. Yeah, it's a fantastic beer. You guys got to find it for yourselves.
Go back and listen to episode 41 of Dr. Homebrew, where we did a commercial calibration of Celebration Ale. And, listen to what we said about it. And if you want to go more in depth and get some cans versus save some bottles from years past and taste those together and see what it's doing. But
go back in time and
you know what, JP, you mentioned amber ale a little while ago.
Yeah.
I'm going to digress for a second. So on my honeymoon a couple of weeks ago up in Mendocino, and we went Fort Bragg.
Congrats.
We went to Fort Bragg. Man. Yeah. Thanks, man.
Oh,
we went to Fort Bragg for lunch one day, 'cause it's only like 8 miles away. Yep. And we went to the North Coast Brewing, which I love North Coast, and I kind of haven't had any of their beer for a while. So I had a sampler, and a lot of them were like just the old classics. Oh my God, that Red Seal Ale.
Yeah, dude. Which Red Seal.
That stuff was the shit back in the day and like the 20 years ago. And it's still really awesome.
Yeah.
And that's a style that like, man, like red IPA, amber IPA, you can have malt and not have it be like sweet, cloying, caramel. I mean, it can be, you can have some malt that goes along with balances out that hop bitterness, hop flavor.
Yeah.
And it can be a good thing.
It definitely can. Yeah. And I think that some breweries, a lot of breweries, like maybe the growth of craft, I would love to talk about this one day, and nobody would ever really know the answer, but how the rapid expansion of the craft beer scene sort of ruined certain ingredients. Because you have like the stalwarts, right? Like North Coast and Sierra Nevada and all these people that were putting caramel in their IPA and, you know, caramel malt and doing this sort of like funky thing. But you have people who are like, man, I homebrewed 4 times. I'm going to open, you know, I don't know, Long Nuts Brewing Company in the truck stop. And
you better trademark that right now.
Whatever, right? Yeah, I know. And it's like, and then so they didn't, I think that people didn't know how to make beers with certain ingredients. And I think the proliferation of that sort of ruined adding crystal malts and caramel malts to IPAs, pulled it back. And that's how you get the West Coast IPA. But I don't know that transition of that transitional period of like, was it a flavor thing, or was it just people didn't know how to use the ingredient and people got turned off by it? Or you know what I mean? Was it an experimentation or was it a reaction?
There's probably, like, yeah, I think we could probably have an entire show talking about that, like you're saying. But yeah, like so many things, right? Like Simcoe, when it first came out, like, oh my God, it's a cat, it's a litter box. This smells like cat piss. It's terrible. And then people found out, oh yeah, it's only if you pick it at the wrong time that it smells like cat urine.
Right.
Other times it's fantastic. And yeah, I think like a lot of things, it's a lack of knowledge, right? And if you have the knowledge and the skill and the background to do stuff, you're not going to make the mistakes that are going to give you bad flavor. But if you're just kind of dicking around with things, then yeah, if you don't know what you don't know, and then bad things can happen.
Well, at the same time too, if you're like using just one ingredient and it's a one trick pony, or it's like, I'm going to make a beer that has just a ton of Red X malt and like base malt and that's it. Just like,
right.
And like, that's all you taste is that, or the gnarly Red X quality. Like, and you could probably blend it with some other things and have it play nicely, but it's just, that's all you get. And it's too much. But I'm gonna go back to one other thing real quick too. And just like with aging the celebration a little bit, I meant to chime in and say that with my Arrogant Bastard, like sometimes as it approaches the drink by date with the Arrogant Bastard, like at first it can be, it's an arrogant beer. It's, and I love it, but it's that dank resiny quality is really strong at first. As you let it age a little bit, that smooths out and it becomes a maltier thing with that 7.3% alcohol, a sweet alcohol with a little bit of the resiny quality. It smooths out a little bit over time. And to me, maybe it's just a you know, like reminiscent thing for me. Like when I drank it, it was probably aged a little bit earlier. You know, when I was first drinking them, like it had settled down a little bit because I had an older bottle, and you get it fresh at the brewery. And it's like, wow, that's intense and different. But you know, I do like to let it age a little bit and just kind of smooth out.
Yeah, absolutely.
But
all right, that's enough. I think we've done enough radio for one night, everybody. If you want to be on this show, and why wouldn't you be? Let's be clear about that. Email brian@thebrewingnetwork.com. He will get you on the show scheduled and everything. We'll get your beer sent over to us and we'll figure out how to get it to each other. And we will sit and talk about your beer and you can be on the show too. And it could be a good, lovely, beautiful thing. So that's brian@thebrewingnetwork.com.
We're looking all for right. A few celebrity brewers too, to help increase our popularity. You know,
that's right.
There's got to be celebrity brewers out there. Let's have an episode with just celebrity brewers sometime.
We're going to screen your entry. Look at TikTok followers. If you don't have enough, then
we're going to get Kanye. If you're listening, send in your beer.
Well, you know, Will Wheaton, he's a home brewer, right?
We've tried to get
that's
him.
Good
on.
Point.
He's ghosted us several times, so I'm not on the Will Wheaton fan train anymore.
I've met him at homebrew cons in the past. He's a nice dude.
Yeah,
I don't know where he goes to. Like, maybe it's your reputation, okay. JP. I don't know. You're the
cute one. This is years ago, so who knows?
Okay.
When it was first like, oh, he's super popular nerd homebrewer guy. And it's like, okay, that's fun. And we didn't hear back from him. It's like, oh.
Shut up, Wesley. Sorry. Sorry, that's going to interfere with our ability to ever get him to come on the show. Sorry.
It's okay. Never going to happen anyway, so I don't really care. All right, everybody. Thanks a lot for tuning in. And until next time, we'll see you later.